Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. In a major decision today, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that immigrants, even lawful ones, convicted of some crimes, do not have a right to a regular bond hearing while their immigration status is under review. The 5-3 decision overturns a Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals ruling that had said that criminally convicted immigrants have a right to twice-a-year bond hearings to determine if they're a flight risk. Now, again, the nation's highest court overturned that today. And the ruling covers immigrants convicted of some crimes, such as drug or illegal firearms possession. But it also includes domestic violence or child neglect, and it includes some people who are seeking asylum, even those who surrender themselves at the border. So it's a complex but important ruling, and let's break it down a bit. Joining us now to do so is Rosanna Cavallero, professor of law at Suffolk University, where she teaches criminal law and evidence. Welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thank you.
Also with us is Sarah Sherman-Stokes. She's the associate director of the Immigrants' Rights and Human Trafficking Program at the Boston University School of Law. Welcome to you as well.
Thank you so much for having me.
So first of all, let me just kind of lay out the basics of the case. It revolves around a man named Alejandro Rodriguez. He'd been brought to the U.S. as a 2-year-old, and then when he was 24, he pleaded guilty to misdemeanor possession of a controlled substance. Now, because that was a drug offense, it triggered an immigration review for him, and he ended up getting held for 3 years without appearing before a judge to seek bond. And it seems as if today the United States Supreme Court has said that that is constitutional. So, Rosanna, what's your reaction to that?
Well, it's pretty troubling. We could get lost in the weeds of how they interpreted the statute, but the bottom line is that they're saying that what you just described is okay because he is in a status other than a full citizen. And it creates a division in our society that I think we should find pretty troubling. Mm-hmm. 3 years without a hearing when we know that many of the people described that are in this category are going to ultimately be told, yes, you can stay. No, mm-hmm. you won't be deported. So that's really the troubling part of it.
Well, Sarah Sherman-Stokes, Justice Samuel Alito wrote the majority opinion, and he seemed to indicate that that lawyers representing these immigrants have other tools by which to, you know, seek due process for their clients. You know, they mentioned like they could seek a writ of habeas corpus. So why is that not satisfactory?
Right. Well, first of all, it rests on a presumption that's inaccurate, which is that all of these non-citizens have lawyers and access to legal counsel, which they don't. So non-citizens that are facing deportation from the United States don't actually have the right to an attorney unless they can pay for one themselves. And so many people go through this system, this very complicated system, without the benefit of an attorney to represent them. So the idea that unrepresented individuals, many of whom are navigating the legal system for the first time, or as you mentioned earlier, are seeking asylum, people who are traumatized, people who are survivors of torture, that they would be able to successfully file a habeas petition in federal court pro se without the assistance of counsel is pretty ludicrous.
Now, so Rosanna, help me understand something here, because we're talking about some criminally convicted or pleaded immigrants here. Again, even if they are lawful immigrants, they have still entered the criminal justice system for various reasons. And then, but we're also dealing with a civil issue, right? Because Samuel Alito pointed to the fact that he and the majority didn't see anything in the federal immigration statutes that would support the idea that these immigrants have a right to a bond hearing.
Well, so the particular statute directs that they be held and have a hearing to determine whether they should be deported, and it doesn't say in that statute that they should be periodically reviewed for bail eligibility. And so he's saying, well, if it's not in the statute, then there's really no power of the court to read that in and give that right. And I think that people can really reasonably disagree about whether that's the case.
Right. Yeah, and so Sarah Sherman-Stokes, your response to that? Because clearly five of the justices said that the court shouldn't be reading things into the law that they didn't see are there.
Right, absolutely. And I think, you know, such a grafting onto the statute, as would be suggested by the non-citizens and their lawyers, is not unprecedented, right? So in 2001, a majority opinion written by Justice Breyer, who has an impassioned dissent in this case, wrote the majority opinion in a case called Zedvitas, which said that we can't indefinitely hold non-citizens in detention after they've been ordered removed from the United States. And they said that 6 months was a reasonable period of time. So that kind of a reading is not unprecedented. And I think, you know, was very reasonable here.
So I want to explore the implications of today's rulings with both of you a little bit more. But just before that, I want to take a step back, because it may sound as if, you know, that this case was decided or you know, that the government argued in this case as the Trump administration. But in fact, this is the second time that this case has reached the Supreme Court. And the first time it was the Obama administration making essentially the same argument that the Trump administration was making this time around, that there's nothing in the federal statute that would support the right for these immigrants to have bond hearings. So, Rosanna Caballero, this dates back several years.
Yeah, and I was surprised to see that, because, you know, we think that sort of that we change teams and we have a different agenda in terms of our attitude or relationship to those who are in the United States on status other than full citizens. But part of the subtext here, and again, we could go off in another direction, is that it's also about a separation of powers idea. That is, as between the courts and Congress, who's going to make the rules about how we deal with those who might ultimately not be allowed to stay. So I think that is what precipitated, you know, the Obama administration deciding to seek review of what the Ninth Circuit announced. And, you know, the Ninth Circuit is known for being on the, you know, the left end of things. Mm-hmm. So they announced not only that, you know, something should be done, but that there would be like a bright line, 6 months, and you can't be held longer than 6 months, which is, you know, pretty out there rulemaking for a court, that is to say, you know, to announce a standard when there's no language in the statute for it at all. Right. Now, I don't think it's unwarranted, because we do have to have a sense of what is reasonable, and we could either go back to that idea of reasonable and let different courts decide it ad hoc, or we could say, as they did, look, 6 months is to us reasonable. We shouldn't have people held more than 6 months without someone taking a look and seeing whether they, as persons who enjoy the rights of any person within our borders, mm-hmm. should have the right to what we think of as fundamental bail.
Right.
That is, you don't pay a penalty because there's a delay in getting to your case.
So to that point, I mean, it seems as if the majority ruling was looking, again, through the lens of the statutory, a statutory reading here of the case. But Justice Stephen Breyer, who wrote the dissent, he actually read his dissent from the bench today.
Right.
So quite not a very regular move. And part of what he read in his dissent, he wrote this, quote, "No one can claim, nor since the time of slavery, has anyone to my knowledge successfully claimed that persons held within the United States are totally without constitutional protection."
Right.
So Sarah Sherman Stokes, I mean, that's a very passionate reading of today's ruling. I mean, Breyer is implying that, as Rosanna said, have we all of a sudden created a new class of person in the United States that's beyond the reach of the Constitution?
Yeah, I think it's a very troubling indeed, and I want to speak to that. But just one clarification I want to make from a comment earlier, which is, it's the 6 month mark is not that the doors of the jail open at 6 months.
They get a hearing,
right? And so the court has to evaluate whether this person is a danger to the community or a flight risk. And so there's a hearing that's held. But in response to your question, yes, I think, you know, Justice Breyer took the very unusual move of reading his dissent from the bench. As I mentioned earlier, he wrote the majority opinion in Zedvitas, a previous decision about indefinite and prolonged detention. And you can tell he feels deeply passionate about this issue. He believes that the Fifth Amendment's protections extend to all persons within the United States, whether or not they're citizens. And he's saying, you know, we can't engage in this legal fiction. And I talk to my law students about this often, this idea that we close our eyes and pretend that something is happening when it's not. We do this in the law often. And here he's saying, you know, we can't do that anymore. We can't pretend that these people don't have rights. In the case of asylum seekers, we can't pretend that these people aren't actually here. We can't pretend that these people aren't detained in our jails and detention centers when they are. They're not just knocking at the door. They're physically present, and they're entitled to protections under our Constitution.
Hmm.
And I think we have to recognize also, pardon me, that this is happening in the context of a very public awareness of the increased aggressive enforcement by ICE, that these roundups are taking place and taking place in all these settings that are so troubling. Someone's going in and trying to seek help for domestic violence and ending up being detained. So I don't think I don't think Justice Breyer is unaware of that when he's speaking about the climate that's created by a rule in this particular case.
Right.
A climate of tolerance of this phenomenon, as Sarah described, of a cohort of people being kept in essentially prison conditions until we get to them.
Right. So, and it's a good point, because our climate today is a very peculiar one. But again, I keep thinking that the Obama administration made the exact same argument as the Trump administration. So there's something also going on here that crosses at least those two White Houses. But one last quick question. We're about to run out of time here. Rosanna, the Supreme Court, in its decision, remanded the case back to the Ninth Circuit, though. So procedurally speaking, what happens next?
So they asked the Ninth Circuit to think about the constitutional question, because they had ruled based on how they understood they should look at the statute. So it's certainly not beyond imagination that the Ninth Circuit would say, we're going to get to that question, and we're going to say that among the other rights in the Constitution that we've already recognized those in these intermediate statuses enjoy is the right to bail, because there is a right to bail in the Constitution. So we may not have gotten to the end in terms of what will happen to these individual detainees. We have yet to see how they'll construe that on the instruction on the remand.
I see. Well, Rosanna Cavallero is a professor of law at Suffolk University. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And Sarah Sherman Stokes, Associate Director of Immigrants' Rights and Human Trafficking Program at the Boston University School of Law. Thank you so very much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Back in a minute. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.